The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Welcome back to the second hour of the show this morning. We were speaking to Garthana Maguire and Tom Boyd of the IFA about young people driving tractors. Caller says we see this quite steadily on the roads. Young boys on tractors driving flat out, some of them on mobile phones. It's ridiculous the amount of young ones out on the roads these days. Go to some petrol stations at weekend evenings and you'll see many tractors there having meetups. If you drive a car, you have to abide by the rules of the road. The same needs to apply for taxi drivers. Another caller says, I note the Garda mentioned the Farming Code of Conduct Section 7 says children under 14 should not be allowed to drive a tractor. If the legislation says you must be 16 to hold a tractor licence, how is that document acceptable? What is required for a person to drive a tractor on the road? My understanding and my recollection from what Garda Niall Maguire said is that the 14 is the minimum age at which young people should be driving tractors on a field on a private farm within the confines of the farm. 16 is the age at which you can hold a tractor license under certain circumstances to drive a tractor on the road. But the 14, as I understood what he said, the 14 referred to the minimum age at which a young person should be allowed to drive a tractor on a farm itself. That was what I took up, and if I'm wrong about that, I apologise, but that's my understanding of what Niall said. Children as young as 10 are allowed to drive cars at some diffing yards. How is this allowed to happen? It's putting ideas into their heads that they can drive and handle a car, and that needs to be addressed. Caller says Main Street in Newton Cunningham has been closed today due to roadworks. There is no clear diversion in place. There was no notification to residents that there would be a road closure this week. Questions being asked by our correspondent there. Going back to the crossings in Ballybuffet, caller says, I have to say that crossing at the Bank of Ireland in Ballybuffet is a disgrace. What's wrong with the Road Safety Authority to allow the likes? Now, as we heard from Councillor McGowan, there was an experimental traffic light pedestrian crossing system being implemented by Transport Infrastructure Ireland, which controls that road because it is a national primary road that goes through Ballybuffet. They have implemented this experimental layout in Ballybuffet. There are also experimental layouts in Dublin and in Limerick. The Dublin and Limerick ones have signage, the Ballybuffet ones does not, and that's part of this pilot experiment that began last year. That's the situation as it stands. Before we go to a break, just want to address an issue in Derry. Caller says, we went last night to Derry for the Halloween event. It was fantastic until we got back to the car park in the Foyle side. The barrier broke and no cars were allowed to leave. We had to wait an hour and a half with a car full of tired children. When we approached the workers and said the barrier was now off, could we not just leave? We were told no, because they were trying to work out a way to make... they were trying to make a way that people who parked there could pay. A brilliant night was destroyed up to this point, would not address attendee a event again. Now, we got a response from Foyleside, and I'll just read that response to you. It says, we're aware of issues last night after the Halloween celebrations. Unfortunately, with the volume of people trying to leave the city centre around the same time it transpires, our team at the centre car parks were able to get a few hundred cars out before the entire city centre gridlocked. Council and the PSNI were contacted by our staff. Unfortunately, no provision had been put in place for this. We had many extra staff in place, but despite their best efforts, city centre traffic management was not arranged, and we'll be addressing the issue today with Derry City and Strabane District Council and the PSNI to ensure this doesn't happen for future council organised events. That's the response we've had from Foyleside. So, yes, there were issues yesterday in Derry after the fireworks. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh with you until 12 noon. Now, you'll have heard yesterday on the news and indeed on the show that there have been issues with a locum radiologist that was employed at Letterkenny University Hospital on a short-term contract in September. That contract was terminated within 10 days after serious concerns were raised regarding the standard of that locum's work. We're joined on the line by Professor Pat Nash, who's the Celtha Group Clinical Director. Professor Nash, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Donald.
Professor Nash, tell us the timeline as to how this issue came to light and how it was addressed.
Yes, Donald. This radiologist was employed as a locum in Letterkenny back in September. In total, the radiologist worked for 7 days before the contract was terminated, as it was alerted that there was concerns about reporting on a number of scans. Those errors were corrected. And I suppose in light of those concerns, the radiologist contract was terminated. We're currently reviewing all the work that was done during that period, which is about 300, just over 300 X-ray scans, and getting them double reviewed to be sure that there is no other cases of concern that haven't been identified that we need to follow up on.
If there are cases, and I mean, there may well be people listening who had X-rays at Letterkenny University Hospital over the course of September, and they may be wondering now, you know, am I one of those? Potentially, am I someone who got a misdiagnosis?
Well, the vast majority of them were identified in, or more or less immediately, and reports corrected without any delay. So the ordering clinician would have got a corrected report, and as a result, manage the patient appropriately. I suppose we are finishing the review to be absolutely assured that there's no other. So we would hope to have that review done in the coming weeks. And if there is any outstanding, which I think is unlikely, but if there is any outstanding patients that we need to contact, we will be in touch with them. But in the majority of cases, any of the errors were corrected early and the reports amended and forwarded to the clinicians.
One of the questions that was raised with us when this was discussed on the programme yesterday was, how could this be allowed to happen? Was this person's references checked? Presumably they were interviewed, presumably their CV was studied. Did something happen at that stage where something was missed, or were there issues with the references? I mean, you know, how did someone who had issues like that manage to get to work in the hospital?
No, and this person, we did go through a recruitment process. They are on the specialist register with the medical council. We did get references from elsewhere in the country, but it became rapidly apparent that the quality of the work was not at an appropriate standard, and I think it was identified early, and intervened on quickly to prevent a large number of X-rays being reported by that person. So I think the recruitment did go to appropriate processes. It is challenging to recruit locum radiologists and any locum staff, but particularly radiologists. And we are, Letterkenny is very challenged with, we have a low number of permanent radiologists there and a number of vacancies for a number of years. And we're trying all measures, both with national and internationally, to recruit permanent staff to Letterkenny Hospital.
And you're satisfied with the timeline in terms of these discrepancies being noted and acted on and action taken to remove this person from the active working in the radiology department?
I am. I think it was identified quickly and the response was prompt. You know, anybody coming in, you need to observe their practice. You need to be assured, you know, you need to be assured. In any X-ray reporting system, there's always going to be a discrepancy, a low discrepancy rate. And so you do need to be fair and to be assured that is this person of the appropriate caliber and competency to stay working there. So I am assured. I think the timeline, this was identified early and intervened on very, very quickly.
We know that over the course of the past number of weeks, GPs in Donegal and consultants at the hospital have both independently written letters to the Health Minister and indeed to senior officials within Southa as well, expressing grave concerns about situations at Letterkenny University Hospital. It's to say the least unfortunate that this has happened within weeks of those letters being sent, because there's a focus and perhaps a headlight on Letterkenny University Hospital at the moment, which you know, must make your job a little bit more difficult, and this certainly won't have helped.
No, I mean, I think we widely acknowledge, and it's acknowledged, Letterkenny is one of the busiest Model 3 hospitals in the country. It is the busiest one. And I mean, there's been a huge increase in activity in the last year. There's been a 10% increase in ED attendances compared to it from January to August in 2023 compared to the same period last year. So the activity levels are rising. So there's a huge pressure on the hospital. There is a two-story modular unit extension to the ED being progressed, and I think that's essential because it is an extremely busy hospital with rising attendances, and we need to have the infrastructure and staffing to be able to manage that volume of patients. And I think by far within our region, which is from Galway to Letterkenny, we have four Model 3 hospitals. This is by far the busiest Model 3 hospital other than Model 4, which is Galway University Hospital, but Mayo, Sligo, Port Yonkla, it's much, much busier, much higher levels of activity.
And there are a lot of political arguments, obviously, about funding and so on and so forth, which I won't go into with you because that isn't in your purview, but certainly those arguments are there. In terms of the references, again, someone has asked, was this person's references contacted? You've already answered that. The answer is yes. Has Letterkenny University Hospital and Seilton now informed other hospitals and health authorities about this person and the issues that arose?
I mean, we are finishing the review. Once we have the exact final figures on it, we will be, if as it seems very likely, we will be referring this patient to the medical council for their assessment. They're the regulatory body for doctors and for their assessment and they will do their own processes to follow through on that.
And just to make sure that I've understood what you said earlier, this person was on a list which is produced by the Medical Council, a list of people who are qualified and who are capable of doing the work necessary. So this person didn't just come out of the ether. This person was on a Medical Council list of qualified professionals.
Yeah. I mean, any specialist doctor has to go through an accreditation. You know, if they come from outside Ireland or if they're trained in Ireland, you have to be approved by the Medical Council with your certificate of specialist training that you're of an appropriate competence to work and as a specialist. And this consultant had that specialist certification with the Medical Council.
Does there need to be review of how that is organised and how effective that certification and registration process is, given what's happened here?
Well, I think the Medical Council, I can't speak for the Medical Council. They're the regulatory body and an independent regulatory body that I, as a doctor, and all doctors are accountable to. And I suppose if the concerns that seem apparent are borne out with the final review, we will be referring that person to the Medical Council for their assessment.
Well, we'll certainly wait to see what happens with that. In the meantime, Professor Pat Nash, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you.
That's Professor Pat Nash there, the Southwick Group Clinical Director. And you'll have been hearing, obviously, on the show yesterday and on news and elsewhere as well, that this radiologist's contract was terminated. They were in Letterkenny on a locum basis, but that was terminated on the basis of the fact that an error rate of in excess of 33% was detected in the work that was done. A person worked in Letterkenny for around about 7 days. Contract was terminated 10 days after it was agreed. And as Professor Nash said to us there, they're completing their internal review and they'll be passing those details on to the Medical Council. But it did confirm to us that this person was registered with and on an approved list of medical professionals, which was presented to the hospital by the Medical Council. Earlier we spoke to Kathleen, who is selling off all her crafting materials as a result of macular degeneration. Caller says that, poor lady, I'm a crafter too, knitting, crochet, embroidery, painting, dressmaking, you name it, I do it. I really don't know how I'd cope if I lost my sight. Please tell her she is in my thoughts and prayers. Now, the one thing I will say is Kathleen did make it quite clear that she was continuing her knitting. She was continuing her crochet on the basis that she does those by touch rather than by sight. And she is continuing to run the knitting group that she has run for several years now in Carndonagh as well. So she's not completely turning her back on the crafting issue. Caller asks, why is there so much antisocial behaviour around Halloween? Students from an area putting fireworks in glass bottles and setting them off into crowds, thinking they're funny. Don't they realise the injuries that could happen to themselves and to others? Also, we have an email in, and I'll just read this to you briefly. Tonight at approximately 9:45, a firework was deliberately thrown at my home. in Donegal. There was a loud explosion of red and orange outside my kitchen window. The house filled with an acrid gunpowder smoke or smell. My kitchen window was open. I was cooking. I checked my CCTV. It showed someone throwing a lighted firework onto my front lawn at my gates in front of my boat. It then exploded and took off, hence the massive red-orange explosion. I called the Gardaí, who attended later. I surveyed my property by torchlight and found the explosion crater on the front lawn and the debris cardboard firework capsule, which would account for the explosion. It was red peony with titanium tail. There is a large debris field at the side of my house where the explosion occurred. Gardaí now have the cardboard tube for fingerprinting and DNA analysis. I am treating this as an attempted arson. Had it come in the window of my house, it would have been on fire, and potentially worse, a fatal, non-fatal burn injury could have occurred. Hopefully the cardboard tube will have enough evidence to catch the assailants. Had the firework gone in another direction, it could have incinerated my fishing boat or severely damaged the vehicles parked at my home. Given the forensic investigation that would ensue, I would encourage the assailants to come forward. Now, fingerprints and DNA are powerful tools, and these people will be caught. So says our email correspondent there. And there's nothing really we can add to that. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. A very good morning to you. Let's talk energy and energy sustainability. A very important conference coming up in Derry in 2 weeks' time. 2 weeks tomorrow, actually, being co-hosted by the Derry and Letterkenny Chambers. It's the Northwest Future of Energy Conference. It takes place in the Everglades Hotel on Thursday, November 16th. Delighted to be joined on Zoom this morning by Jamie DeLargy, who is going to be the MC at that particular event. Jamie, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
Jamie, this is a very important event because the energy debate, and in particular the sustainable energy debate, is one which continues to rage and is going to become all the more important in the coming years.
Yeah, that's exactly, I think, what should be our focus. Because, you know, when you look at these business conferences, and I host them, you know, they're important in their own way. But this crisis we're facing of global warming is something that we all have to address. And, you know, we are required to live up to, you know, our commitments. And the fact of the matter is that at this time we're seeing actually with some good news on gas and electricity prices. Some tariffs are coming down today, but there is the obvious chance that they could rise. Because we've seen, you know, the World Bank has been warning the cost of crude oil could rise to $150 a barrel if the war in the Middle East escalates. So there is the prospect, the possibility that we could pay in much higher prices for energy. And the more that we are able to generate energy on this island for ourselves, the more potentially we can be insulated from those price shocks. So that's one reason. That's sort of a self-interest. But the other thing is that, as I was mentioning, you know, global warming is an enormous problem. And it seems, I think, a little bit remote because we're all focused on the issues of the day. But the reality is we have got to do our bit to save the world. It's as important as that. And so that's why this conference, okay, it's one of a number of events, but this conference is an important element in this whole battle to try and save our planet.
There's a huge debate coming down the line with regards to offshore wind energy, and we know that certainly areas around Loch Foyle, areas off Inishowen, areas off Derry indeed, have been identified as being very suitable for offshore energy developments. We've seen a number of very successful ones in other countries in Europe. There's one major one off Ireland at the moment, off Arklow. Now, when you get into a debate like that, you are moving into a situation where, on the one hand, wind energy, really, really important. On the other hand, a sustainable fishing sector, really, really important as well. So there are a lot of conversations to be had with regards to the sustainability of one sector versus the sustainability of another, and can two sectors coexist side by side? And conferences like this perhaps are important areas where those conversations can start.
They are. And I suppose we should look into why people want to put wind turbines offshore. I mean, we've seen quite a number of wind farms, both north and south. So what is the imperative to get them offshore? Well, it really comes down to you get more bang for your buck, really, if you're putting them offshore, because your wind turbines offshore deliver more energy on a like-for-like basis compared with their onshore counterparts. I mean, you're talking about, and I don't want to get too tactical here, but if you look at a thing called capacity factor, and that measures how much you're going to get out of your system. And now, potentially, if you had a 100 megawatt wind farm onshore over the period of a year, you might expect to get that operating at 25%. So it's equivalent to a 25 megawatt sort of fossil fuel generator on all the time. Offshore, it's 40%. New build, they're talking about much higher levels of energy production from offshore. So offshore is key. Why is it offshore so much better? Well, because the wind is steadier. You don't get the same levels of eddies in the wind offshore, and it's stronger offshore. And another thing is probably you can build them higher. Well, you can build them higher onshore as well. The higher you go, the bigger the wind turbines, the more you're going to get. So in a sense, what I mentioned was get more bang for your buck. Maybe you should modify that in the sense you're getting more out of the system is probably a more accurate way of putting it. So that's why we need to go offshore, even though, as you say, there are issues that people are concerned about with fisheries. And we have to balance our priorities. But offshore is the way to go. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. One of the other issues that's being discussed here is competitiveness. And that's important because these are businesses. These are chambers of commerce. These are representative bodies that represent business. And ultimately, a business needs to turn a profit. So businesses absolutely want to do their bit for the environment. Businesses want to ensure that they have sustainable energy into the future. Businesses want to be sure that they're serving their communities. But businesses also want to ensure that they're making money and that they're carrying out their environmental obligations in a way that's cost effective. So there needs to be also discussions about how can things like decarbonisation, how can things like, you know, improving your sustainable energy also coexist with continuing to turn a profit, continuing to be able to pay their employees, continuing to operate as a business.
Well, it's not just businesses that face this challenge. I mean, we're all going to have to install greener energy technology. And for some people, it's not just businesses, for some people, that's going to be a real challenge given the fact that they don't have the money. So a phrase that is assuming greater importance, certainly here in the North, is this idea, and I'm sure in the South, is this idea of the just transition. And so households that can't afford it really need to be helped to install the heat pumps, for instance, that are going to be a feature in households across the country. So, and businesses likewise, you know, will need a help. Will need perhaps, I don't know, you could be talking about grants. I think that's going to be an essential feature of the transition. You're going to talk about maybe making money available at lower rates of interest. I mean, money has been fairly cheap. Now that's changed. And probably may not go down, interest rates may not go down to where they were. So you're really going to have to help businesses who just do not have the capital, do not have the resources to make the transition. But hopefully once they do, they will then in due course, as households as well, see lower rates, lower bills, and hopefully won't see the enormous fluctuations that we've seen in prices in recent years. So, you know, there are prospects. The sunny uplands are there, but people need to have a wee bit of hand to get across to them.
And there have already been some success stories in the region, and some of those are to be presented at the conference.
Well, I think there's going to be a number of different case studies presented, which I'm looking forward to hearing about. I think we've got we'll get the detail of that in due course. I think it's important to mention we've got an excellent keynote speaker in Claire Neenan, who's managing director of SSE Electricity, which of course supplies gas and electricity on this island. So, you know, we have the excellent array of speakers who are going to appear there, as you said, just over 2 weeks from today. And they'll be enlightening us on what they're doing and what the challenges they face and how they're going to be overcome. And yes, and also the success stories that have been notched up so far. So plenty to look forward to. There's no doubt about that.
As you said, it's a joint presentation by the chambers in Derry and in Letterkenny. Important that there is a cross-border focus on this, and important that as we look into the future, that there is more and more cross-border cooperation on this, because this can't be something that each individual little enclave does itself. This is something that's going to have to be shared, and it's going to have to be done in as wide an area as possible. And it would make no sense whatsoever for Donegal and Derry to be operating on different strategies.
Well, you've touched on an incredibly important point, because you know, if you're a developer, a wind farm developer or a solar farm developer, you're looking to see you're looking to see how difficult it is or how easy it is in terms of planning to get your site set up. You're also looking at what help you might get. You're also looking at what prices you might expect to get in the market. So, clearly, you don't want to distort things by having, it seems to me, but this is a debate that has to be had. You don't want to distort that market by having different arrangements north and south, where people see it being more advantageous to go to one part of the island rather than the other. It makes sense to have some broadly similar levels of support. I very much think it is really an imperative. But, you know, perfectly align them may not be possible, but certainly I think that there should be strenuous efforts to try and make sure that, in a sense, we're all offering a similar attractive prospect to international companies who want to come and invest their money on this island.
One area that is to be discussed, and it's an issue that's discussed really widely all over, is that of electric vehicles and electric vehicle charging. And we're told time and again that more and more people would buy an electric vehicle if there was a guarantee of a better charging network. Now, that's going to be discussed by Piers McHenry of My Energy over the course of the conference. And it's an important one, because particularly in this area, where if you want to drive to Belfast, you're talking an hour and a half to 2 hours. If you want to drive to Dublin, you're talking 3.5 to 4 hours. So, you know, people in this region who want to make longer journeys, if they have an EV, they're going to have very serious questions to ask about charging infrastructure. And maybe those questions are what's stopping a lot of people from actually going down the electric route.
Well, you've unsurprisingly touched on a critical point here. We as a family holiday quite regularly in Malham, and you know, we don't have an EV. But I would worry if I was getting an EV, just how realistic it would be, the prospect of getting there and being able to get back maybe in a hurry. And how you would charge up on the way, or what sites would offer the opportunity to do that. So I think that yes, it is definitely something that is deterring people from acquiring EVs and giving up their fossil fuel driven cars. So we have to do something about that. We have to make people comfortable that they are not going to be stranded with a flat battery and miles from nowhere, and how on earth they would sort that out. So crucial, and it is the case when you're changing technology, you have to provide people with the comfort, the reassurance that if they invest their own money, that they are not leaving themselves worse off than they would have been if they'd stuck with the old technology. And that is that's critical in terms of not just EVs, but other things that you might want to put in. So that if you have, for the sake of argument, you want to put in a heat pump, you want to be assured that the people who are putting it in are well trained in it. You want to be assured that you can get the parts. You want all the confidence that the technology is going to serve you well, is going to be maintained. There's going to be people there to do it, and you're not going to be left with something that gives you problems. Because we know with our oil boilers or gas boilers, our petrol cars or diesel cars, there is the backup. And we have to make that leap, and we don't want to make a leap in the dark, is effectively what I'm saying.
Yeah. And indeed, when we speak of EVs, I mean, it's not just a matter of householders. I mean, to go back to the business discussion, we know that, for instance, in the Republic, Anpost has gone electric with its vans. ESB has gone largely electric with its vans, and Donegal County Council is moving toward going electric. I know the same goes with Derry City and Strabane District Council. They're looking to go electric with many of their vehicles as well. And I'm sure many businesses across the region would like to go electric and look at a more cost-effective fleet decision for them. But again, it's going to be down to that charging network. So, I mean, you know, it's not just the householder going on their holidays or going on a day trip. We're also talking that EV charging infrastructure could be hugely important for businesses. Freight delivery services, things like that. I mean, I'm sure a lot of them would like to go electric, but they're not going to go electric if they don't have that reassurance you refer to.
No, they're not, because you're talking about quite a bit of investment for a household, for a business to switch over in that way. They want to be assured that their vans, their lorries, or what have you, are going to be able to be charged up. Now, the obvious thing for them to do is install those charging facilities at where the vans and the other vehicles are parked. At the same time, they're going to be out in the road. They're going to be travelling fair distances. They want that assurance. So yes, I think that obviously too the cost of EVs is coming down, but I think it probably needs to come down to lower levels, or we need to provide more in the way of grants. I'm not quite sure of the grant situation in the South, but we need to provide something to people to help them make that transition. But the charging network is absolutely critical in giving people the confidence to make the move.
It's the 2023 Northwest Future of Energy Conference and Exhibition, the Roadmap for Energy Sustainability. It's in the Everglades Hotel on the Brehon Road in Derry. It takes place on tomorrow fortnight, Thursday, 16th of November, at 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. A lot of exhibitors and stands, of course, as well. And that, Jamie, is going to be important to give people the chance to have conversations with potential suppliers, with potential partners. And very often at conferences like this, those conversations over coffee can be as important as listening to a presentation.
Do you know that networking I mentioned earlier that I do? I host these events, these business type events, and I often think that the networking is perhaps not quite as important as what they're hearing, but is a crucial element. And there are, as you say, lots of organizations, companies going to be represented. The main sponsor is SSE Renewables, of course, which owns wind farms and operates them north and south. So, you know, there is the chance to try and understand that whole form of energy production in greater detail. But getting in a one-to-one with someone and explaining to them your predicament, what you think, getting advice, getting that sort of almost like a personalized discussion where you can put your queries and you know you're going to get quality information, as I think is a wonderful thing, and conferences offer that in the coffee breaks and in the lunch hour. It's not just about listening to the presentations, and they'll be fascinating in themselves. There's much more to it than that, as you suggested, with the networking.
Jamie Delargy, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, Donal.
If you were listening to the news with Donna Marie early this morning, you'll have heard Councillor Martin Harley, the Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council, discussing the issue of accommodation in our hotels and guest houses over the course of the summer, because we have, it seems, a serious lack of accommodation, and that's not going to impact on the hotel sector, that's going to impact on other sectors as well that service the tourism industry. Councillor Martin Harley, good morning.
Morning, Donal.
Martin, in terms of the situation, you're in the pub business yourself, and obviously the more people there are staying in hotels locally, the more people there are visiting your premises, the less people, conversely, there are in hotels, the less summer trade you're going to get.
Yeah, this is something probably been on the national executive of the vintners as well, Donald. This is something that has come up at national level as well, that I'm listening to it all throughout Ireland. But Donegal, with the high numbers of people that we have staying in the county, like you're looking at near 10,000 people now between Ukrainians and asylum seekers. So it's a massive amount of people. And there's about 2,500, almost 2,500, which are over 50% of all the beds, hotel beds in Donegal are taken up now, through no fault of their own, through Ukrainians and asylum seekers. So it's a very difficult situation. And you know, it's great, Donald, like when we listened last week where Donegal got the fourth best place in the world to visit from the Lonely Planet Guide. You know, my worry is going into next year that people try to come here, that the accommodation for the people, we won't have accommodation for people, and that there's a knock-on effect then, as I say, to other businesses that depend on people walking around towns that are staying in hotels, going in to have a cup of coffee, buy a paper, go into gift shops, all the knock-on effect from that there. Even I've talked to councillors in Bundoran, where you have a fish and tackle shop that is closing because they couldn't... They were depending on tourists staying in the area for doing a bit of fishing and also, and they were getting the turn out of that. So,
yeah,
it's a massive issue going forward. I'm just trying to think of where can we leave ourselves come start of next year's summer season.
And the problem, of course, is when you have people staying on what is supposed to be a short-term situation, we don't know how the conflict in Ukraine is going to pan out at the moment. At this point in time, it does seem to be it's going to be a stalemate for years and years to come. So whatever maybe hopes there may have been of an early resolution to that conflict, those hopes, I think, have probably at this stage faded. And it's difficult to see where there is going to be a situation in the near future that refugees from Ukraine can go home and rebuild their lives at home, which of course is what they want to do. But at this point in time, the conditions for that to happen aren't there. So unless we can come up with a different plan whereby people can be accommodated in situations that are appropriate and are comfortable and are suitable and are safe, it's difficult to see where we're going to find that alternative.
Yeah, and you see, it's not really very fair on those people either, Donald, because nobody wants to live out of a suitcase. And as I said at our meeting, that we all love to go on holidays. We love to go on holidays for a week somewhere, maybe or a few days somewhere. But it's always nice to get back into your own bed, as I say. But you can imagine waking tomorrow morning and thinking, this is what I'm going to be doing for the foreseeable future, because, as you say, I can't see an end to this over the next couple of years, really and truly, because even by the time if the war stopped tomorrow morning, by the time Ukraine starts rebuilding again, we're looking at 18 months, possibly at least anyway, before a lot of those cities are even started to rebuild again, and the investment that will be needed from probably worldwide countries to do that. So I wish I could come on the show and tell you that I have a solution to it all. I don't. I suppose I'm just highlighting it and to see what we can put in place and what to try and make life comfortable for them as well. But at the same time, we have to try and secure our own economy into the future as well. And the economy, and for the people who work in all these small businesses as well, secure their jobs into the future as well.
And obviously, and it's a discussion we have so often in so many contexts in Donegal, but, you know, maybe in some areas the solution is going to be build more capacity, build new hotels, build accommodation centres, build more housing. We're going to have that added complication, of course, in Donegal. And complication is the wrong phrase. It's a phrase I don't like using because it makes it sound like an irritation. We have the situation where there are many people in homes affected by defective blocks that over the course of the coming months and years are going to be knocked down and have to be rebuilt. So much of the building sector in Donegal is going to be focused on replacing homes affected by defective blocks and working in that sphere, that it's really difficult to see, even in Donegal in particular, how we could talk about rebuilding capacity in terms of hotels and accommodation centres when already we know our building sector is going to be absolutely pushed to the wall with defective blocks.
Yeah, that's the issue as well. Even if we had enough money in the country tomorrow morning to replace all those houses, there's not enough contractors. And that's like a lot of businesses now. It's very hard to get staff. And the building industry is no different to any other industry. And then, see, we have the added problem as well then, whereas I mentioned at our local area meeting this week where we had a project of 24 houses in the Balbuffy area that had been sitting on board Pinella for 22 months. And then after 22 months, they said, no, it's a floodplain. Yet Donegal County Council granted planning for that on two occasions. Yet it can be turned down then. After 22 months, it takes 22 months to make a decision. That's not positive either. And we have to get this going, and we have to get it moving quickly, and quicker than it is moving at the moment.
It's a conversation that's going to have to be national, really, isn't it? Because there's not going to be a local solution in Donegal to this. There's got to be conversations involving Fáilte Ireland, the tourism authorities, local authorities, be it through the LAMA or whatever, and government itself. At this point in time, is the government talking enough to Donegal County Council about these issues?
I think they're talking about it on a national level. I know we had a full day's meeting in Donegal County Council regarding housing and the different options that are available. It's getting all these there's a lot of projects up and coming. Even at our local area meeting yesterday, we talked about new plans for a new building in Lyford, St Johnston, Stranorder, and Convoy. So I mean there's plans there, but it's getting these units built and getting people into them, because then that frees up other houses that other people can rent then, because that's all part of the issue, the all overall issue. As I say, I've talked to different publicans from around the country at national executive level in Dublin there a few weeks ago, and a lot of the counties are coming on a tourism level are talking about the same things. As I say, Donegal is the third highest amount of people that have been displaced from their own countries staying in Donegal, and it seems we're one of the highest after Dublin and maybe Kerry as well, but we're in the top three there, and that is a big issue for Donegal going forward.
Councillor Martin Harley, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. And people can hear that on news as well, of course, and it's online on our news pages on HighlandRadio.com.